from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson in this morning for Michael Krasny. Friday night, the New York State Senate voted to legalize gay marriage. And later that same evening, Governor Andrew Cuomo signed that measure into law. The New York State Senate is controlled by Republicans, and it was the first time a legislative body with a Republican majority had approved gay marriage. But Friday night, four Republican lawmakers joined Democrats to pass the bill. One of them was State Senator Mark Grisante of Buffalo, who campaigned against gay marriage, but in the end voted for it, saying, quote, "I cannot deny a person, a human being, a taxpayer, a worker, the same rights that my wife and I have." So does the vote in New York have significance beyond the boundaries of the Empire State? And in particular, does it have significance for the upcoming 2012 election? Joining us to talk about that this half hour, Scott Schaefer, reporter and host of KQED's The California Report, also has been covering the Proposition 8 trial. Scott, good morning.
Good morning.
And joining us as well from Washington, Ken Rudin, who is, of course, the political junkie at NPR. Ken, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
Happy to have you both join us. Well, let's talk first about the overall significance. Ken Rudin, Andrew Cuomo said yesterday, if New York can do it, then it's okay for every other place to do it. Is he right?
No. Well, he's certainly hopeful, and of course, but we've seen that every time this measure, any time a same-sex legislation has appeared on the ballot, it's been defeated by voters. In the six states that now have same-sex marriage, it's been either implemented by the courts or the state legislatures. Now, there are more and more attempts to get them on the ballot. Obviously, the New York victory is big, because if you look at the other states, it's like most of them are small states in New England, of course, in Iowa as well. But there could be some kind of a momentum to get them on states that have defeated them in the past, in Maryland and Rhode Island and Oregon. But what New York really does, Dave, two things. First of all, as you said, the fact that it was a Republican legislature, that's big, because that's the first time it's happened. But also, it may change the attitudes and the dialogue in this country. And if President Obama, who, remember, in 2008 campaigned on marriage is between a man and a woman, if Obama's views are evolving, as he says he does, and shows some leadership, that could prove to be a big effect.
Scott Schaefer, how do you view this? You've been covering, of course, almost nonstop, it seems like, the Proposition 8 trial now for many a moon. Do you see this as being a game changer in some way?
In some ways. I mean, certainly the biggest impact, direct impact, will be on the gay and lesbian couples in New York State who, in 30 days, will be able to get married. And newsflash, Neil Patrick Harris announced his engagement this morning. But no, I mean, each state is different. There were a unique set of circumstances in New York State. I mean, you have a very, very popular Governor Andrew Cuomo. I think in some ways what's interesting, we are seeing, I think, in some ways a gradual erosion of opposition, and we're seeing it in many places, including just a couple weeks ago in the bankruptcy court in Los Angeles, which tossed out or refused to toss out a bankruptcy petition by a legally married gay couple. And said it was a violation of the DOMA, was a violation of the Constitution. So you're seeing these little chipping away of DOMA and opposition, both political and legal, in different places. But as Ken points out, I think 41 states have either a outright ban or some kind of limitation on same-sex marriage. And so it doesn't change everything overnight by any means, but it's significant.
Scott Schaefer joining us this hour. He is, of course, the host of KQED's The California Report and has covered the Prop 8 trial, joining us along with Ken Rudin, the political junkie at NPR. We're going to open up our phone lines early in this half hour as well to get your thoughts on the New York decision, what you think it portends for 2012 and beyond. Our number is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and add your comments there. Scott, just one point on this that I'm curious about your reaction to. I happen to know that you grew up outside of Buffalo, New York. So I was particularly struck by the quote from State Senator Mark Grisante of Buffalo. That's a conservative area, a long time the area that was represented in Congress by Jack Kemp, of course. Does it strike you as significant that someone from upstate New York would now move in that direction?
Yes and no. I mean, New York Republicans are not the same as Republicans in other parts of the country, number one. And secondly, what does strike me about this is the personal becomes the political, and the political becomes the personal. I mean, so many of these legislators and so many of the Wall Street businessmen who got behind this have a niece or a nephew who's gay or lesbian. Andrew Cuomo, his longtime girlfriend, has a brother who's openly gay. And so I think that is really what's happening in a lot of ways, is that gay and lesbian people are more open and they're more vocal, and especially younger folks who, for whom, whether they're gay or straight or Republican or Democrat, gay marriage is not a big deal. And I think that's really where the influence is happening, is that, you know, at Thanksgiving dinner and Christmas dinner and birthdays, it's like, hey, come on, Dad, you know, you're on the wrong side of this.
Well, why don't you weigh in on that as well, Ken Rudin? It is I've sort of taken to thinking about this as the kind of gay nephew factor, that this is now something that intersects with the lives of many families, from Dick Cheney to the former mayor of San Diego and many others who have changed their views because of that personal connection. Do you see that now as something that is a real factor, perhaps in changing Republican politics in particular?
Well, that's a very good point, because as Scott points out, if you look at what happened in Buffalo last year, the candidate for governor, the Republican candidate for governor, was Carl Paladino, who was strongly anti-gay unions, anti-civil unions. And as a matter of fact, the Buffalo area was one of the ones that Andrew Cuomo lost overwhelmingly in a big landslide election. So the fact that you have a senator from that district, from that area, voting for it, one of the four Republicans voting for it, is pretty major. But look at Ken Millman, and you're going to see a lot of profiles.
The former Republican chair, yeah.
Right, who headed up, you know, George W. Bush's reelection campaign in 2004. And, of course, Bush campaigned against same-sex marriage. And here you are, Ken Millman. You have Ken Millman, who has come out since he left the RNC, but raising tons of money, using his influence, and saying, look, this is what the Republican Party has always stood for, the freedom to get government out of the bedroom, out of our private lives. And what better way to show it by approving same-sex marriage?
And Scott, what about how you see that trend, or if that trend exists within Republican politics in California?
Not so much. You know, the Republicans who, first of all, we don't have any statewide elected Republicans anymore right now in California.
Do you have any Republicans? Are there any Republicans?
Well, there's in fact so many in the legislature that they can't get a budget passed. just enough. But the Republican Party and the elected officials who are Republican in California do tend to be more from the more conservative part of the party, much more so than in New York State. So I don't see it. I mean, in the last election, Carly Fiorina and Meg Whitman both were against gay marriage. They both supported Proposition 8. So I don't see it so much happening here in the Republican Party, at least not yet.
Go ahead, Ken.
Could I just say, and look what's going to happen. The 2012 presidential campaign obviously kicks off in Iowa. Iowa is one of the six states that has same-sex marriage, but the judges who voted for it were recalled by the voters in 2010 in a dramatic repudiation by the voters for same-sex marriage. So if the Republican nomination kicks off in Iowa, I suspect that the Michelle Bachmanns, the Tim Pawlentys, and the Mitt Romneys of the world are not going to be very sympathetic to this vote in New York.
And in a poll out yesterday, Michelle Bachmann was actually tied with Mitt Romney in Iowa. Let's hear what some of our listeners are thinking about this subject this morning. Colin joins us first in San Francisco. Colin, go ahead.
Good morning. My question would be, I'm very supportive of what the New York legislature did. I have to wonder precisely the effect on the Republican presidential primary, whether there's going to be a litmus test for the candidates who can be the most stridently opposed to same-sex marriage and in favor of a ban on any state recognizing same-sex marriages. Michelle Bachmann seems to be the most ardent proponent of that position. Romney, the front runner, may be in a situation where he has to sort of assert his bona fides, especially since he had previously stated back when he was running against Ted Kennedy in 1994 that he would be more pro-gay than Kennedy.
Colin, let's hear what Scott and Ken think about that. Do you see Ken Rudin, any candidate on the Republican side who might be more supportive of gay marriage, or will, as Colin suggests, this be kind of a litmus test?
Well, I think it's just a given that no Republican can possibly survive a primary or caucus, let alone a chance for the nomination by supporting same-sex marriage. You know, for the first time in history, I think Gallup poll, I guess it was last month, showed a majority of Americans support that. So there is, we talk about President Obama evolving, there is some kind of evolution with public opinion, but not in a Republican Party that, if you look at what the difference between the GOP between 2008 and 2010, it's a much more conservative Republican Party. The question is whether it's much more socially conservative as well.
Yeah, there is one candidate, John Huntsman, the former governor of Utah, who came out as a Mormon and as the governor of Utah for civil unions. And it'll remain to be seen whether that's a problem for him in the primaries. And I think one of the problems the Republican Party faces on issues like this and on immigration is that the path to the nomination is not the same as the path toward winning the election in the general election. And so what may get you the nomination may hurt you in the general.
Let's spend a moment talking about where President Obama is with this. Ken, you mentioned a couple of times his famous evolving state on this question. He spoke to a group of gay supporters last week, some of whom, obviously, Scott Schaefer, are here in California. Will this push him, do you think, in that direction?
Well, it is pushing him, but he's going in that direction. I think because of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and some of the other things he's managed to get done, he's bought himself some running room or some time, perhaps. I think that after Prop 8 passed here on the same night that Obama won in a landslide in California, there was some bitter feelings toward him, and it was kind of a, you know, put up or shut up sort of situation. But there was a huge fundraiser, as you said, last week, coincidentally, in New York City on Thursday night. And he, you know, he skated around it. He said that there are more pages of the history to be written together, you know, phrases like that. And I think that'll get him through 2012. And he's already, they've also announced that they're not going to defend DOMA anymore. So they're moving in that direction, clearly, he's obviously neither he nor Hillary Clinton are quite ready to say they're for gay marriage.
And Ken Rudin, is there, pushing it further, an opportunity on the Democratic side to sort of own this issue?
Oh, they have the issue if they want it. The question is whether he wants it. Because, as we saw in 2008, Barack Obama was very, very cautious, very careful not to just go too far, too beyond what previous Democratic nominees have said. So, you know, he could have taken leadership before the New York vote, and he didn't. He could have, as Scott says, could have taken some leadership following the Prop 8 or before the Prop 8 vote, and he did not. Basically, he's going to have to see whether, you know, he, look, many representatives of the administration were booed last week at Netroots Nation, the group of progressives, who just said that, you know, the administration has a golden opportunity to show its true colors, and they're just not standing up.
And Joe Biden came out for gay marriage quite a long time ago. No one pays much attention to that. And Dick Cheney and Al Gore and a lot of others.
Let's go back to our calls. Michael in Sunnyvale is next. Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, my question is, I understand that in New York, what's different about the law that was just passed along same-sex marriage is that you don't have to be a New York State resident to actually be married. And so I'm wondering how this may accelerate the process for getting to the Supreme Court with what's been happening in California with the Prop 8 trials. And I'm wondering what you, Ken, and Scott think about now the acceleration toward conflicts within the U.S. Constitution and the Interstate Commerce Clause and what this means for California.
Michael, thanks.
Yeah, there's no question that New Yorkers are going to get married and then they're going to, you know, just as people do, move to other states. And that does introduce legal questions and equal protection and that kind of thing. On the point, though, I thought I heard, and I could be wrong, but that New York State is not going to allow couples from outside the state to get married there, as Massachusetts does and I think D.C. does. But I could be wrong about that.
Ken, do you know on the residency requirement?
No, but I do. It's my understanding that they certainly do and will recognize same-sex marriages from other states.
Yeah, they do that now.
Yeah, exactly.
And so where might that push things or bring us up to date if it affects it at all, sort of the ongoing saga of Proposition 8?
Well, it's in so many levels of court, it's hard to follow. But just a couple weeks ago, the district court, the chief judge of the Northern District who took over for Vaughn Walker rejected a motion to have Vaughn Walker's ruling on Prop 8 tossed out because he came out as gay and in a relationship. So now it's still in the courts, but it's in the Ninth Circuit because the backers of Prop 8 are appealing Judge Walker's decision in the Ninth Circuit. But the Ninth Circuit has asked the California Supreme Court to weigh in on the question of legal standing and whether the backers of an initiative can bring an appeal on behalf of the voters when no one else will. And in this case, the governor and the attorney general, are refusing to defend Prop 8. So the backers are saying, well, someone's got to do it. We're going to do it. But it's not clear that they have the legal standing to do that. And so the state Supreme Court is going to sort of advise the Ninth Circuit federal court as to whether state law allows backers to defend an initiative. If they say no, if the state Supreme Court says they don't have the legal standing to do that, that could be the end of it. Judge Walker's decision could stand, and the Ninth Circuit could be the end of it, and the U.S. Supreme Court might not even take it up. But there's a lot of ifs there. The oral arguments from the state Supreme Court haven't even been scheduled yet. That'll probably happen in September.
So the clock is barely ticking on this, right? I mean, it has a long way to play out. Everyone sort of thought this would land with the United States Supreme Court. There's a long road to travel before it would ever get there.
There is, and there's some folks who say, hey, let's put it back on the ballot in California. Public opinion's evolving, and now with New York State, so on and so forth. But it's highly unlikely that it'll go back on the ballot here in California before the legal process is exhausted, partly because no one really wants to fund a ballot measure that could lose while this is going on in the
courts. So that means the clock's already ticking on 2012, so it wouldn't happen then? Is that right, Scott?
Well, it could if somebody put up $1 million and collected signatures, there's evidence that that's going to happen.
Yeah, Ken, sorry.
And also make the point, and don't forget that no ballot initiative has ever succeeded on same-sex marriage. And so the way to do it, obviously, is the state legislatures. And if we're talking about political backbone, just go to Maryland, who has a Democratic governor and overwhelmingly Democratic legislature. Maybe Maryland is the next state to go. Then maybe Rhode Island, whose governor, Lincoln Chafee, supports same-sex marriage. So it may be state by state by state. But I still think that even though the polls do show some indication of shifting, I still think putting it on the ballot to the public is risky for the pro same-sex organizations.
It is. The one thing I would add to that, though, is that it's a generational issue, like I said earlier, that, sad to say, but as older voters pass away and younger people start voting, there is sort of an inevitability, at least in California, that same-sex marriage is going to continue to grow.
And let's take another call. Ben joins us next from Oakland. Ben, go ahead, please.
Hi. I'm wondering, it seems hard for me to believe that there could actually be more support for gay marriage in New York State than there is in California. So I'm wondering, what is it specifically about New York that allowed the gay marriage to pass there, and is it specifically the influence of big interest groups or special interest groups in California that caused it to not pass here?
Okay, Ben, thanks. Part of it, Ken Rudin, is the fact that it went through the legislature.
Exactly. That's the major difference. In California, Prop 8 was rejected, by the voters, whereas in New York, the voters never had any say on it. It was the state legislature. But as you pointed out earlier, what was so significant is that this was a Republican state legislature, in this case, the state Senate, that voted for it. And that's the first time that's ever happened.
Yeah. And the other thing is, too, that this was a top-down effort. Andrew Cuomo, back in March, said, I'm going to run this out of my office. And he appointed a top advisor to do it, because a couple years ago, it was a very disorganized campaign for gay marriage in New York, and there were mixed messages, and it just wasn't very well thought through. He really ran the operation out of his office, and it was very coordinated with people like Michael Bloomberg, the Republican, or I guess now independent mayor of New York City, who got behind it and really assured Republican legislators who were worried about their reelections that they would support them. Wealthy Republican businessmen said, we'll support your reelection if you vote for this.
One of the other states that's been mentioned, Ken Rudin, as a possible place where action might take place on this issue is in Pennsylvania. I don't know if it's as likely as Maryland and Rhode Island, as you were suggesting a moment ago, but Pennsylvania is also the prototypical battleground state. Can you tell us anything about that and how this might wind up, if it is on the ballot in a state like Pennsylvania, playing a role in the 2012 presidential election?
Well, if you just look at the 2010 results in Pennsylvania, it elected a Republican governor. Both houses of the state legislature are held by Republicans. So I would think that is far more problematic for the pro forces to get it passed in Pennsylvania. But again, it is a swing state in November. But as we've said before, in Republican primaries, in Republican caucuses, this philosophy still seems to hold true. And it may be an interesting battle in November of 2012. But if we're talking about Republican candidates, Pennsylvania seems to be a long shot, especially if it goes on the ballot before the voters.
Scott, one other area I'm curious about, if there has been some shift among the some Republican donors, those of a more libertarian sort of orientation, as you were noting a moment ago, and that that played a role in New York. What about sort of traditional opposition to gay marriage within some parts of the Democratic electorate, African-American voters in particular? Any sense in the polling that's been done? You mentioned generational shift. Any shift in that area?
Well, I think that was overplayed a little bit after the Prop 8 victory in 2008. There was a lot of speculation, and I think subsequently polls and more focus groups and analysis of that election showed that there really wasn't a disproportionate opposition to same-sex marriage in the Black or Latino communities. The most recent polls I've seen in California showed even among just Catholics, more support for same-sex marriage than you might imagine. So it is definitely a generational issue, but I think that the opposition based on race, it's more about religion, I think, and age than race.
Ken, you want to weigh in on the religion factor at all? You know, New York, there was some speculation that why didn't the Archbishop, Timothy Dolan, weigh in more on this factor? Is religious opposition diminishing?
Well, that's a good question, because I think that when you know, the problem it has in Rhode Island, which again is also overwhelmingly Democratic legislature, it's the number one Catholic state in the country, and the Catholic Church, of course, has always been, you know, battling this. But in other states, I have not seen any indication that the church is the kind of opposition that we have seen in the past.
And to Chris, who joins us next from Fort Worth, Texas. Chris, go ahead.
Hi. It seems like every argument against gay marriage has something to do with it's either religious or thinly veiled religious. And it seems like the First Amendment clearly says shall respect no establishment of religion. How come this hasn't been a First Amendment issue?
Chris, thanks.
Well, you know, I think what we've seen in the courts increasingly is that tradition, religious opposition, morality, this is the way we've always done it. Those arguments are falling by the wayside in front of many, many judges. And it's also, in fact, at the U.S. Supreme Court in a couple of decisions written by Anthony Kennedy. That rationale has not really won the day. But in terms of the law, I think that the people who have been supporting gay rights just feel that there is a stronger path looking at things like due process and equal protection.
And let's take one more caller. Arthur joins us next in Palo Alto. Arthur, go ahead.
Thank you. Two things. One is, with respect to the previous topic, why not extend Medicare taxes to those to unearned income as well as earned income? With respect to the current topic, how does gay marriage hurt those of us with straight marriages? It seems that those of us who are already married can stay married, and gay people getting married doesn't cause any more divorce among straight people.
Arthur, thanks. That's the argument, of course, that people like David Brooks have made. He's a conservative, therefore he's for marriage. He thinks more people ought to get married than ever. Frank Bruni, writing in the New York Times yesterday, said, "We're not trying to undermine the institution of marriage. That task is being ably handled by people like Tiger Woods, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and John Edwards. We're, in fact, paying marriage an enormous compliment."
Yeah. Well, in fact, that very question was asked of the attorneys for Proposition 8. Judge Vaughn Walker, in some of the pretrial motions, asked Charles Cooper, the main attorney for Prop 8, what harm does this do to straight couples? And his answer was, "I don't know, Your Honor." Hmm. And that came back to haunt him during the trial. But you know, it is a question.
And Ken Rudin, is that sort of where things in the end will begin to change? We referenced the personal part of this earlier, but this sense that, well, no harm, no foul?
Well, I think that's true. I think once you see what happens in New York, given the huge population of New York, it won't be a henny penny, you know, the sky is falling kind of thing. If things don't change, I mean, I think it just shows that if we straight people have awful marriages, let gays have the same opportunities for awful marriages. And I think that works out fine. Fair is fair.
Let's spend our last few moments then thinking through how this will likely play out in 2012, both in terms of the state elections and also nationally. Ken, you mentioned that so many states, the prospects for this don't look entirely good. There are 29 states that have constitutional bans, a dozen others that have laws against it. While the tide may be turning, no one's going to get inundated by this anytime soon. Is that your sense?
Absolutely. And there's probably going to be a referendum on the ballot in Minnesota, perhaps North Carolina as well. And both sides seem to indicate that the ban on same-sex marriage will pass in both states. And you think of a state like Minnesota, like California, a progressive state, a liberal tradition, and yet the money that goes into these referenda is just enormous. And it just seems like one side continually wins. And I suspect that'll happen in 2012, especially with a battle among who could be the most conservative, most so-called pro-family in the Republican field.
Well, and let's not forget, too, with the economy, where it is in a ditch and unemployment hovering around 9%, it's really a luxury for people to be thinking about. That's not the right way to say it, but it's not going to. It's important to a lot of people, but the economy just clearly trumps this issue ultimately, I think, in a general election.
And Scott, where then, you were mentioning that nothing is going to go forward right away in California while we await the legal decisions on Proposition 8. Are advocates then of gay marriage within the gay community basically going to say, well, we have to sit this out in 2012 in terms of getting anything on the ballot?
Well, there have been public town hall meetings that Equality California has been holding. There's a bit of a split in the community. The Courage Campaign, which is another sort of gay rights progressive group, is pushing to put something on the ballot, I believe. But as I said, the donors, I mean, the both sides on the Prop 8 campaign raised about $40 million in 2008. And that kind of money, anything like it, could probably not, I doubt it could be raised this time around until this legal question is settled. And for part of it is donors are thinking, well, gee, we've won one round in the district court, federal court. It looks pretty good in the Ninth Circuit. You know, why would we want to put something on the ballot where we could lose and undermine the legal case? So,
and just a last, Ken Rudin, what's your speculation on where President Obama will evolve to?
That is the key question, because I think he has a tremendous opportunity now to just show where he has evolved to. And, you know, he has the luxury of seeing that more and more polls show a majority in favor of this kind of a change. And so I have a feeling, I mean, I have a sense that for all the criticism Obama's been under for not being decisive enough on this issue or that issue, this seems to be almost a little risk opportunity to take a stand and show where he has evolved.
Do you agree with that, Scott?
Not necessarily. I think that he could, and I don't think there'd be much risk. But we'll see. I don't think he feels like he has to do that, and I sort of doubt that he will.
All right. Well, we'll see where it continues to evolve, I guess. Scott Schaefer, KQED reporter and host of the California Report, thank you. And Ken Rudin, political junkie at NPR. Thanks very much, Ken. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave.
Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Dan Zoll is our senior editor, and Raul Ramirez is our executive producer. In the hour ahead, we'll talk about today's Supreme Court decision striking down a California law regarding the sale of violent video games to minors. That's coming up in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.